Okay, let me first thank the organizers for the opportunity to present a talk here. It's very nice to be in a Resurgence conference. So I want to talk, my talk is a continuation of what Alba said, is in a sense the link between what she said and Resurgence. But I want to make some more general, since this is a conference where I think we want to discuss also, we have to do some sort of soul searching. I want also to talk about more general aspects of Resurgence. So, in physics, we usually have two different approaches to a theory. Namely, you can have a non-perturbative definition, which encodes, in principle, the full information that you want to get from a theory. But these non-perturbative definitions rely heavily, sometimes, on numerics. For example, you know, quantum mechanics gives you a well-defined framework to do many calculations, to define the spectral theory of operators. We know that given an operator in quantum mechanics, you know, the spectral theory of this operator defines everything you want to know. But very often, you only have access to this information through complicated numerical tools like numerical diagonalization. And this also happens, for example, in gauge theory. In principle, we have a non-perturbative definition of many gauge theories through lattice definitions. But all these non-perturbative definitions are not very illuminating for human brains. I mean, I think you know, we have some sort of anthropomorphic problem here in the sense that, you know, all these non-perturbative definitions are maybe maybe good for computers or for quantum computers, but for human brains this is not very good. So we want to have some sort of different approach to physics that is not relying on this very non-human devices like numerical diagonalization or lattice gauge theories. And there is even a more important problem that in some cases we don't really have a non-perturbative definition, and this has been the case with string theory in arbitrary backgrounds. So we have to really find something else apart from a non-perturbative definition, even when we have one. Now, what we try to do with our human brains is to approach physics with a perturbative or a semi-classical approximation, which we have some sort of intuitive approach, and where we also have some analytic approach to some extent. Now, this is very nice, but of course, we often cannot make the bridge between this perturbative approach and the non-perturbative definition because the perturbative approach is incomplete to the existence of non-perturbative effects. And I would say that Resurgence is actually the bridge between these two things. That's what would be my general definition of what Resurgence is.
Also, for gauge theories with chiral matter content, there is no lattice regularization.
There is no?
Lattice regularization.
Yeah, of course, you know, there are many cases in which this is part of what I said here. There is not always available a non-perturbative definition. So Resurgence is, in a sense, would be the bridge between this. And what we technically do is essentially we enlarge the kind of series that we can consider. Instead of considering series just in one small parameter, just the coupling constant, for example, we consider other small parameters like exponentially small quantities, and we try to account for the exact non-perturbative answer by using this enlarged perturbative framework. And this is, I think, what Resurgence is about, is how we can get the full non-perturbative information by relying only on things which are nice for our human brains, right? Which are perturbative series, exponentially small things, and things that we can compute recursively, and things and so on. So this leads, I think, to the following working definition, which is based on at which extent we can actually make this bridge between the two things. So I would say that a non-perturbative function in quantum theory can be semi-classically decoded. This is just a name, you know, some people can object to this semi-classical. Let's talk about something that is good for a human brain, semi-classical. So a non-perturbative function can be semi-classically decoded if you can write it as a Borel, regeneralized Borel-Eckel resummation of a trans series. So given a non-perturbative object in quantum theory, you can always ask, can I recover the full quantum object by some trans series and some Borel resummation of this trans series? And when this happens, we say that we have semi-classically decoded this non-perturbative object. Okay. So, of course, this is, I think, one of the goals of Resurgence, to try to semi-classically decode as the maximal number of objects possible. And we know that this has been the case in many examples in quantum mechanics. In quantum mechanics, for example, it was known for a long time that, for example, the energy levels of the double well oscillator can be semi-classically decoded in this sense. And this is interesting for the double well because there you actually need a trans series. You cannot just deal with the perturbative series. You have to have an extra exponentially small parameter, which is due to instanton effects. And it was shown by Saint-Justin and other people that you can actually fully decode the spectrum of the double well by using these trans series. Now, In the last years, I think one of the reasons why resurgence has had this kind of renaissance is because many other simple low-dimensional topological and supersymmetric theories have been shown to have also these properties. Now, of course, there are many open questions, and I think one of the big open questions is that if this is true, for example, this semi-classical decoding is true in Jamiel's theory in infinite volume, no small boxes, no circles, no, just the true Jamiel's theory. My lattice gauge theory friends, like Martin Luscher, tell me that this will never be the case, but I think this will be one of the open problems in resurgence. Okay? Now, so in a sense, the progress of resurgence is the progress of semi-classical decoding. The more we can semi-classically decode, the more progress we are making in resurgence. Now, so how semi-classical decoding works in string theory? Well, in order to see if you have semi-classical decoding, you have to compare two things. You have to compare a non-perturbative definition with a perturbative series or a perturbative trans series. So in order to see if semi-classical decoding works in string theory, one first needs a non-perturbative definition. And there is an example where this also works very nicely in string theory, and these are non-critical superstrings. In non-critical superstring theory, you can define non-perturbatively your quantities through ODEs, ordinary differential equations, non-linear ODEs like Pan-Leve 1, Pan-Leve 2, and so on. For example, the free energy of non-critical superstring theory is defined by the Hastings-MacLeod solution of Pan-Leve 2. And it's known through the work of people like Eckhart and Ovidio Costin that you can actually semi-classically decode these objects in a very interesting way. So we have the perturbative series, which is the universe expansion, and then you will have corrections in the trans series that have been interpreted as Nibrane effects. So this is a case in which we really have a very beautiful picture, and I think it's good to remind ourselves that resurgence works in non-critical string theory and non-critical superstring theory. In a sense, this is work due to many people, but you can now reinterpret all everything that has been done in non-critical superstring theory in terms of resurgence and say, yes, resurgence works in non-critical superstring theory because you can semi-classically decode these answers through trans series. So what is the next step? Now, I have argued many times that the next layer of complexity between non-critical superstring theory should be topological string theory. I mean, maybe we can also discuss what happens in superstring theory, but maybe, you know, it's, as Woody Allen would say, let's not get carried away, and let's first look at topological string theory, which is slightly simpler. And in particular, topological string theory that Alba was discussing before, topological string theory in toric non-compact Kabeljaus, seems to be even simpler for reasons that I'm going to tell you now. Now, this is not, you have to be aware that topological string theory is very useful. And for example, let me tell you that in ABN theory, it has been shown that many important observables, like the partition function on the three sphere, can be actually computed by using topological string theory. And in particular, the N to the three halves conjecture of ABN theory was originally proved by using topological string theory. So this has also applications in ADS-EFT. It's not just a mathematical game, also I like mathematical games. So what is the problem then with topological string theory? But as Alba was mentioning, topological string theory is defined in principle as a generic string theory by a formal divergent genus expansion. So as Alba was doing, I will concentrate on the case in which we have a single modulus for my Kalabi-Jaun manifold, so this I will call lambda. And then, genus by genus, you can compute this free energy, which depends on the modulus, and then what you do is just put all these things together in a formal power series expansion, depending on the string coupling constant. And as Alba was already mentioning, these guys diverge factorially, doubly factorially, and this means that this cannot define this function as a function, if this is just an asymptotic expansion. Now, one of the good things, when we're doing resurgence, and I think it's also good to kind of get concrete, you know, one of the two, you know, when you do resurgence as a practical tool, you really want to be able to compute many, many terms. It would be very hard, for example, to address full superstring theories as a generic superstring theory with resurgence because we'd have a hard time to computing these things to higher genus. I mean, this is really computationally complicated. But it turns out that in topological string theory, you can actually compute this very efficiently using many, many techniques. There has been a lot of work in the last 20 or 30 years of how to compute these things. And in particular, in this toric Kalabi-Jaun backgrounds, you can actually compute them recursively very efficiently. So the most efficient technique is probably a combination of the holomorphic anomaly equations over Saskitch, Ekotti, Gurian, Baffa, You have to combine them with modularity, with modular properties. This was advocated by Albrecht and his collaborators. And if you do that, just by using your laptop, you can compute 100 orders of the genus expansion of this theory. This is a lot. Huh? If you compare to quantum field theory, this is much more. This is actually 100 loops. Huh? So you can compute this. These are topological, these are string theories in which you can compute 100 loops, you know, with a few lines of code in your laptop. Okay, so this is, and these are non-trivial, and all of these functions are not just numbers. They are non-trivial functions of the modulus, you know, of lambda. So these are complicated objects, and when you write in terms of modular forms, these are very complicated objects involving many modular forms and so on. So this is a computable series. Now the question, as Salva was saying, is there a well-defined function behind, which is a function of the moduli lambda and the strict Campbell constant, which has this genus expansion as an asymptotic expansion? This is the kind of thing that people were asking in non-critical superstring theory, and the answer was yes, there is a function behind, for example, the genus expansion of the non-critical superstring theory, and this function is the Hastings-Maglev solution to Pan level 2, which is completely well-defined. So I think non-critical string theories give us, you know, in a sense, the model of what we would like to do here. And this is the problem of formulating topological string theory non-perturbatively, to be able to find such a computable function. Now, as we learned in the previous talk, given a topic Calabi-Yau X, we can associate to it a quantum mechanical operator. I'm going to call it rho X, which is a positive Andrés class operator. And this is this was done, as Alba was mentioning, by just quantizing the mirror curve. So this gives you from geometry, you obtain a quantum mechanical object, a quantum mechanical operator actually acting on the simplest possible Hilbert space, which is L2R. You don't have to do any fancy things. You're doing quantum mechanics on the real line. Now, being trace class means that all spectral traces of this operator are finite. If you know the energies, the eigenvalues of this operator rho x as exponentials of minus the energies, you know, all these traces are well defined. This is what means to be a trace class operator. And the Fredholm determinant is also well defined. Now, the Fredholm determinant can be written in terms of these spectral traces. It's an exponential of a combination of these spectral traces. And this defines these fermionic spectral traces. Now, this definition is a little bit mysterious, but there is a very simple analogy which actually will tell you what this is. Now, imagine that rho is a canonical density matrix, a one-particle canonical density matrix. In quantum mechanics. Now, imagine that you are now make a free gas, free Fermi gas, for this of n particles for fermions whose one particle density matrix is given by rho. Okay, so rho is e to the minus h, where h is the Hamiltonian, the one particle Hamiltonian. This is a non-interacting gas. Now, this fermionic spectral trace is just the canonical partition function of a free Fermi gas with n particles. Okay. So in a sense, this operator rho defines for you a Hamiltonian, an exponential Hamiltonian, and this fermionic spectral trace is just the free energy of the canonical free energy of a free Fermi gas of n particles. So it really has a non-thermodynamic content. It only depends on n bar, on n and on h bar, okay? In the cases that I'm going to consider here, which is in which we have only one single modulus in your Calabi-Yau. Now, the definition of the non-perturbative topological string theory energy, as Alba was saying, is just the log of this quantity. Now, this is remarkable because we have this target, Calabi-Yau, we have maps of Riemann surface to this target, so we have this problem of counting holomorphic maps, and now I'm defining a completely different problem, which is a problem in quantum mechanics. Now, the surprising fact is that this quantum mechanical problem contains all the information about these counting problems. And this is a highly non-trivial statement because this is a quantity in quantum mechanics, and the information that we collect when we count all these holomorphic maps is an information in geometry. And the way to make the contact between the two is actually the Toft limit. So this is really a large N limit, what you have to do. You have now to take N to infinity, H bar to infinity, so that this quotient is fixed, and conjecturally, the asymptotic expansion of this quantity in this Toft-like limit is precisely the genus expansion of the topological string. Okay? So notice two things. First of all, this is a very, very special quantum limit because you have to take the limit in which the quantum limit is ultra strong. You have to take h bar to infinity. This is not the standard thing that you do, for example, in non-critical string theory, where you typically take h bar to 0 and n bar to infinity. This is a dual string limit in which you take h bar to infinity. So h bar actually plays the role of 1 over g string. This is a big difference between this approach and what people did in non-critical string theory. But as I said, this is a highly non-trivial statement, but this is what we conjecture. And this is the asymptotic version of the conjecture that we did with Alba and Yasuyuki Katsuda. And as Alba has also mentioned, there is an exact version of this conjecture, which actually makes possible to define this spectral trace for arbitrary values of n, and not just for positive integer n. And as Alba was also mentioning, there are many, many high precision tests of the Bow conjectures, and no single counterexample that I know about. So this is really a conjecture which mathematically can be made very precise and relates the spectral theory of trace class operators to the Gromov-Witten theory of toric-Clavier three-fourths. And this is, in a sense, a toy model of ADS-CFT, because you have on one side something which is purely quantum mechanical, on the other side you have something very geometric encoding all these maps, and both things are related at all orders in 1 over n. So this is really a 1 over n expansion, so this is true to all orders, and this is a toy model of ADS-CFT where you know for sure, we know for sure from the test that we have done, that it works to all orders in 1 over n. Okay? So, now that we have a non-perturbative definition of the topological strain in terms of these quantum mechanical operators and computable one, we can now ask the question, can we decode semi-classically this non-perturbative definition that I just have given for the topological strain? How this definition relates to the Borel-Lecal resummation of perturbative series? Now, in order to answer this question, the first thing you have to do is just to look at already at the perturbative series and see, for example, you can do a Borel resummation. For example, you take, let me give you an example in standard quantum mechanics. You take the quartic oscillator with the standard x squared plus gx to the 4, and you compute the perturbative series. It's a known result from the 70s that if you just do Borel resummation of this perturbative series, you will reproduce the Nernst Lewis without further ado. You don't even need transseries in order to do that. Okay? So maybe we are lucky here, and just by doing Borel resummation, we already recover this result. Now, in order to do this analysis for you, I want to focus on a concrete model, which happily is the same one that Alba was using, which is local P2. Okay? So, in local P2, very brave people have computed FG to maybe genus 100. So we have 100 terms of the perturbative expansion. Each of these free energies is a function of the modulus of local P2. So we have really a very good testing ground for doing things like Borel summability and so on. I think this is one in practice. Topological string theory is very good for soldiers because you can already do all these things concretely in a computer. Now, the first thing that you learn when you do this, and this could have been done 15 years ago, or maybe 20 years ago, I don't know. Now, looking at what happens with this free energy, and if this is Borel-summable or not, this could have been done long ago, but it was not done. So the first thing you notice is that the perturbative universe expansion, at least at the numerical precision level that you can do with 100 terms, turns out to be Borel-summable for almost all real positive lambda. So let me just fix a value of lambda, 1 over pi, and then you can plot the singularities in the Borel plane by using the first 100 terms, and then you plot them there. Now, this is the positive real axis, this is the imaginary axis, and you see that there are no the dots indicate singularities computed by Borel-Padé, so by Padé approximant. So you can see here that you have two probably branch cuts that go along the imaginary axis, and then on the complex plane you have branch cuts that originate at these points here, but none of these branch cuts crosses the real axis. So there are no singularities on the positive real axis for generic values of lambda. Notice that this is a parameter-dependent model. This is not like in standard perturbation theory where the points in the Borel plane have fixed values. Here, everything depends on your parameter lambda. As you move lambda, these poles will move on the complex plane, but generically, they don't cut the positive real axis. So you can do a standard Borel resummation of the perturbative series and get numerical answers. And maybe if you are lucky, you will see that these numerical answers approach, as you increase the number of terms that you get, approach the exact answer that we have defined with quantum mechanics. Okay, so you can do that. Let me just give you an example. We put n equal 2 and h equal to 4 pi. So this is lambda equal to 1 over 2 pi. And we do the Borel resummation, and we get all these digits here. This is a crazy number. The nice thing about non-perturbative definition is that you can compute this free energy exactly. The non-perturbative definition gives you a way of calculating this using a spectral theory, and for these values you can even write it in closed form. So you see that this is a number which is very close to this one, but not exactly the same. It's already, for me, remarkable. It was remarkable when we were doing this with, I have to say that this is work that done with Ricardo Pouso and Ricardo Schiappa. I was extremely happy to see that this Borel resummation that could have been done 15 years ago was giving a number which was, anyway, very, very close to the definition that we had just found using quantum mechanics. I mean, you know, this is quite crazy, right? This is a quite non-trivial number, and you get at least, you know, 10 digits of agreement with the Borel resummation. So the first thing you have to recognize is that this is not the same number. And this, I think, is a very big surprise for many people, because we have a situation in which the perturbative series is Borel-summable, but its resummation does not agree with the non-perturbative definition. And this is not what people were thinking that would happen in string theory. People would think that in string theory, essentially what would happen is that the perturbative series is non-Borel-summable, generically, and then you have to introduce non-perturbative effects. But what happens is that the perturbative series is Borel-summable, and still you don't get the exact answer, which agrees with the non-perturbative definition. And this is not an isolated result. This happens also in the 1 over n expansion of the ABJA matrix model. The ABJA matrix model calculates the free energy of ABJA theory on the three sphere, and you can compute this with localization. It's a finite interval you can calculate. You calculate this for various n, values of n, and the coupling constant k of ABJA theory, and you find the same structure. You find that the Borel resummation, the 1 over n expansion is Borel resummable, but this Borel resummation doesn't agree with the exact localization calculation. And this also appears, yes?
So just to understand that we're on the same footing, so what you do Borel Padde, and then you just perform an integral along the real axis?
Extended, yeah.
But like, isn't this like the artifact of the fact that you use like Padde approximant as an analytic continuation?
No, I don't think I don't think, of course, you know, you can, this is not a theorem. We haven't shown by a theorem that this is the actual value. But you can see that if you change the order of the Padde approximants, you can change the number of terms that you include, you always get the same stable digits that I show you here. So it's enough for me to show that these stable digits, which are not changed by the technicalities of the procedure, all these digits here are stable under modification of the order of the Padde, of the Borel, of the number of terms of the Borel resummation. All these stable digits are already not matching this exact answer. Okay, so for me this is a clear indication that this is not working. Of course, the only way I know how to do numerical calculation of Borel transforms and inverse Borel transforms is by doing a Borel Padde approximation in the middle. And of course, this has to be justified mathematically in a rigorous way. But here I'm using an approach which is a practical approach. Nevertheless, we are sure that this is not a function of the order of the Padde, for example, that you are using. This is really stable under these changes. So this also appears when you do the semi-classical expansion of the quantum volume appearing in the WQV condition. Sorry? Yes?
No, I had a quick comment again. Yes. So it's not at all unusual that the Borel sum doesn't coincide with the actual object. That's the rule, say, in time periodic Schrödinger operators.
Sure.
You would lose even unitality if it were true.
Yeah. But this is what is interesting, I thank you for this comment, is that depending on who you talk to, the people will be surprised or not. If you say this to a physicist, they will be surprised. If you say this to a mathematician, they won't be surprised. This is my experience. And why? Because in physics, in the standard problems involving resummations for calculating a spectra, not dynamical properties as you are asking, it's very hard to find an example where this is the case. I mean, all the cases for anharmonic oscillators is the case that the non-perturbative approach. Of course, mathematically, there is no single reason why this would be the case. But we are lucky that in many cases in quantum mechanics, this is the case. Yes?
Can I also make a comment, Marcos? It's also essentially the case in any, for example, supersymmetric quantum mechanics or quantum field theory which breaks supersymmetry dynamically.
Why?
Because perturbation theory gives you zero.
Oh, yeah, but this is different. But this is different. Yeah, but this is different because this is a trivial case in which you don't have perturbative. Yeah, no, but these are trivial cases in which you have zero. Yeah. No. I mean, yeah. But that's zero is trivially bothersome. But this must be, of course. But this is an accident. I mean, this is not a non-trivial series where you do the calculations. I think this is more like an accident. When you have zero, zero is a very special number. Now.
There is nothing perturbative there. So what you would be decoding?
No, but this is these are different things. You know, I mean, you can come out with examples of this, but this is our supersymmetric examples in which you truncate the perturbative series. But I'm not interested in these cases in which you have this truncation.
You are saying that decoding is needed, but quantum mechanics is defined without any decoding. And field theory also defined without any decoding. So the original point that you need to decode something, the theory is defined not perturbatively, say, by pass integral. That's it.
No, I don't understand what you're saying. In these cases, you know, there is still the semi-classical decoding in last two trans series.
Yes. Decoding in quantum mechanics to define quantum mechanics.
No, you don't need it, but you know, I mean, I don't know if you follow my first transparency. You can do semi-classical decoding or you cannot do it. This is your choice. If you are happy with numerical diagonalization, you are happy with numerical diagonalization. You don't need decoding to do quantum mechanics.
Right. And it feels needy as well.
You do lattice gauge theory, you forget about all these considerations on any semi-classical approximation that people are doing.
You don't forget about semi-classical approximation.
Yes.
Pass integral is defined beyond perturbation theory.
Well, but the path integral, you know, what is defined or not. I would say, you know, lattice gauge theory is well defined, gives you numbers. Now, you can do this and you don't forget about anything else.
Once you do the regularization, the theory is not even from quantum mechanics.
What does it mean then?
If the theory is UV regularized, then it's kind of extended quantum mechanics, and that's it. So you just count the number
What
degrees of freedom? That's no difference.
Yeah, what is the point that you want to make about my statements?
Formulating as necessity of decoding. I am trying to say that.
No, I didn't formulate the necessity of decoding. I say that, you know, it's a necessity. I actually emphasized the psychological necessity of decoding. It's a psychological necessity. If you know, I'm sure that there are alien civilizations that do not use resurgence because they are very happy with lattice gauge theory. No. But you know, psychology. But here, psychology is very important in physics. You know, as you can see by seeing some of the people doing physics.
Okay.
So what I want to point out here is that there is a non-trivial thing going on here, which is actually seems to be very typical. So what I was saying here now, before I was interrupted, is that the semi-classical expansion of the quantum volume appearing in WKV quantization also have this feature that is Borel summable, but its Borel resummation doesn't reproduce the full answer. And this is very important because here WKV quantization, the quantum volume is also a stringy quantity in the sense that it also diverges with 2n factorial, not with n factorial. This is something that is not widely appreciated, but it's very important. And it actually tells you that WKV quantization is actually closer to string theory than what you would think. And this is something that was developed in a recent paper I wrote with my student Codecido, and it's also going to feature in a future publication with Codecido and Schiappa. So I think that the true novelty of a stringy doubly factorially diverging expansions might be precisely this aspect that the perturbative series is Borel summable, but this resummation does not agree with the non-perturbative definition. And this is in contrast with other theories in which the Borel summable perturbative expansion can be Borel resummed to the exact answer. Okay? So, like for example, the quartic oscillator in quantum mechanics. And I think this was surprising in the sense that, you know, people were expecting all these expansions from all the studies in string theory to not be Borel summable to start with. Okay? But the situation is more interesting. And still, one has to recognize, and this is non-trivial, that these two values, are very close, right? We have here this value, and here we have another value, and these are not the same number, but the difference is very small. Now, this is precisely what you would expect from our conjecture, because our conjecture says that this quantity has an asymptotic expansion, which is given by the string theory answer. So the Borel resummation of the string theory answer cannot be arbitrarily far from this exact answer. So this is actually evidence, indirect evidence for our conjecture. We have direct evidence for our conjecture. And you see, you can see actually this, that the numbers are very close for many values of lambda. So here in this graphic, I plot in black the perturbative resummation as a function of n, and the red dots are the exact answer. And you can see that the difference is not visible to the naked eye. So if there is a difference between the perturbative and the Borel resummation of the perturbative series and the exact answer, it's purely due to non-perturbative effects. So this is what I was saying. The simplest assumption is that they differ in exponentially small terms. Okay. Now, can we compute this non-perturbative effect explicitly? So, and this will be the semi-classical decoding in this sense. Now, here we have the perturbative series. The Borel resummation of this is not enough to reproduce that answer. And the question is, can we have, for example, a one instanton correction of this form with an exponentially small factor and non-trivial Stokes parameter in such a way that the resummation of this actually gives you the exact answer that we were looking for, at least at the numerical precision that we are working on. And the first thing that you find here is that it's not clear how to compute this. How can you compute one instanton correction, space-time one instanton corrections in topological string theory? That's not clear at all. Polchinski, who is here, introduced the idea of D-brains, and it would be great to have D-brain calculus for topological string theory and to be able to do this calculation from first principles, but we don't have such a framework yet, so you have to find another way of approaching the problem. So here, already computing this in string theory is a highly non-trivial problem. The space-time instanton effects in string theory are very hard to compute from first principles. Now, the main idea in order to make progress here was due to Ricardo Schiap and his collaborators, and I think Marcel is also here. And they have this brilliant idea, which is the following. When is resurgence very powerful? Resurgence is very powerful when we have some sort of recursive scheme in which we can introduce a transserious ansatz. Now, if you want to calculate a transserious, you better have an object which allows you to introduce a transserious ansatz. And the recursive scheme in string theory which allows you to do this sort of transserious ansatz is actually the holomorphic anomaly equation over Saski-Cecotti, Oguri, and Baffa. So what Ricardo and Marcel and his collaborators show is that there are transserious solutions to this Bersaski-Cecotti, Oguri, Baffa anomaly equations with the right resurgent properties. Now, there are some ingredients which are not fixed by this holomorphic anomaly equation, and one of the ingredients is what is the action, the instanton action that appears here. And if you look at what people did in non-critical strings, for example, what Ivan did with Volodya Kazakov a long time ago, when you formulate non-critical string theory in geometric terms, you see very clearly that this action has to be a period of the geometric, a period in the sense of Calabi-Yau geometry, of the geometry you are working on. And this was also actually first indicated by André Voros long time ago when they were studying the pure quartic oscillator, and they found that the pure quartic oscillator has an underlying Riemann surface, which is a genus one Riemann surface, and they saw that the periods of this genus one Riemann surface were actually giving you the possible instanton action for your problem. So this is a purely geometrization approach to the problem, and this actually indicates that the instanton action can be computed as a period of the Calabi-Yau. So if you want, this is the period of the Calabi-Yau is, by the way, the mass of a D-brain in topological string theory, so this fits very well with the D-brain idea. Now, if you look, the instanton action should be seen in the Borel plane. So they are actually the points where the branch cuts start. And you can see here there are many actions that appear. There is one which is purely imaginary, which is not relevant for this calculation. There is one which controls the large order, which is the closer to the origin. But it turns out that the non-perturbative instanton correction comes from an action which is here, which is not the one that dominates large order, it's larger. But it's very important it's complex and has a real part which is positive. The fact that it has a real part which is positive means that it's going to give you an exponentially small contribution. And the fact that it has complex tells you that it's not going to obstruct the Borel summability. So in general, when you have this phenomenon in which Borel summability doesn't agree with the Borel resolution doesn't agree with the SAT answer, you have to find for complex instantons which have a real positive part but are on the complex plane. So they can give you exponentially small corrections and at the same time they do not obstruct Borel summability. And this is this action here. Now, once you have all these ingredients, you have to also find the appropriate parameter C. This is the most complicated problem, and I think this is also an important problem appearing in resurgence theory, because in saying the ODEs, this is just a number. But here we are in a parameter problem, so we don't know on which this number depends. And we had to do a lot of guesswork to find what is this C, and essentially this C parameter is a function of N. So it doesn't fit completely in the standard realm of resurgence, and I think David Sosan will talk about it, and maybe a video as well. But you have to go a little bit beyond the standard realm of resurgence. We found the value of C, which is depends on the region. There is a Stokes line, so they have to depend on the region. We found the value. I'm not going to use details of this. But the fact is that when you add this fixed value of here to try to improve to the Borel resummation of the perturbation, when you add the one instanton correction to this with the right value of C, you actually improve the Borel resummation to the SAT answer with all the available digits. So this gives evidence that this non-perturbative completion in terms of quantum mechanics can be semi-classically decoded in terms of the above transcedes. Okay? And coming back to the necessity of semi-classical decoding or not, when we first found with ALBA this non-perturbative definition of the W stream, said, why do we need resurgence? I mean, we already have the non-perturbative definition. This is quantum mechanics. This is okay. But I think it's still important to do this semi-classical decoding because many of the important informations that appear in string theory are in this perturbative expansion. For example, this perturbative series in topological string theory gives you all this counting of curves in a Calabi-Yau manifold, which is one of the most important contributions of string theory to human knowledge. I mean, mirror symmetry, counting of holomorphic maps, and so on. This is really one of the successes of string theory. So, the interesting question here, I think, is that these one instanton corrections that you have to include in order to match this non-perturbative definition might have also a very interesting geometric interpretation, maybe as generalized function counting d-brains in the Calabi-Yau. So that would be a very interesting approach, and I think this calculation opens the way to do this. Okay, so let me come to the conclusions. So we have given a rigorous and concrete non-perturbative definition of topological string theory and topological Calabi-Yaus in the spirit of large chain duality. And I have to say that this is a problem which has opened for a long time. Giving a non-perturbative definition of topological string theory was an open problem for a long time. There were many proposals, but I think none of them have all the properties that our proposal has, which is that it gives just the asymptotic expansion of standard perturbative string theory, is calculable, and it has a non-trivial content, it says that it relates two different worlds, the world of enumerative geometry and the world of quantum mechanics. And we have also shown that this definition can be decoded in terms of a natural transseries. So in particular, you have exponentially small corrections to the Borel resum perturbative series, and this is precisely what you need for a bona fide completion, you know. I mean, you want to have just the asymptotic series plus exponentially small corrections, and this is what we find exactly here. Now, there are many open problems. For example, I have to say that this partition function can be written as a matrix model. It's very similar to what ALBA was telling us recently. And one question is, can we compute the transseries directly in the context of matrix models? So can we take this matrix model, which is very explicit, and write these instanton corrections as instanton corrections in this matrix model? And this is a highly non-trivial problem, because this matrix model, calculating instanton effects in matrix model, it's not obvious. As I was mentioning, what is the geometric meaning of these transseries? I mean, this in a sense is a non-perturbative extension of Gromov-Witten theory, and it would be very interesting to find some meaning to this, maybe in terms of d-brains, as Joe originally found. So there should be some maybe topological d-brains in this Calabi-Yau string theories, which lead naturally geometrically to these transseries extension. Okay, so this is everything I want to say. Thank you very much.
I actually wanted to make a comment about your first slide when you evinced some skepticism about Yang-Mills theory,
yes.
Having a transverse representation directly.
Not my skepticism, okay, not an expertise. Martin Luther's skepticism.
Skepticism. Yes, yes. About Yang-Mills theory, right, an infinite volume.
Yes.
So if you want to focus on just an infinite volume, to make the question of whether such a thing exists as a trans series, you have to first say what is the parameter?
Yes.
What is the
yes.
expansion parameter?
Yes.
Now, there is, of course, we all know, there is supposed to be an infinite parameter for Yang-Mills theory, an infinite volume, which is 1 over n.
Yes.
So, so basically, if you're going to be a skeptic about that, that there exists a trans series representation of Yang-Mills theory, you'd be a skeptic that the theory has a string theory representation, which itself has a trans series representation. So, of course, we haven't shown that the string theory like that exists, or that trans series representations of string theory exist, but both of those things are quite plausible, especially given your beautiful results.
Mm-hmm.
So I would not be that skeptical.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I was not transmitting my skepticism. On the contrary, I think there are many progress that can be done. Already, there are this amazing work by people doing, say, lattice gauge theory to high orders and seeing the connection with Renormalons. So I think even in that context, I think there is something to learn from very elementary resolution. So I'm just saying that we know that the semi-classical decoding has been done in many examples. I think what you are doing with this compactification is fantastic work because it's really one way of approaching this. But I think this is largely an open problem if Yang-Mills theory has this semi-classical decoding or not. My friends in lattice gauge theory don't want to say that there is not such a semi-classical decoding, but you know, they are also biased, psychologically.
I have two questions. Can you show the slide with the cuts? I mean, the branch cuts.
Yes.
So first, do you know if you can hope to compute explicit resurgence relations, or what Eckhart calls the bridge equations, between the different cuts? And second question is, I didn't understand if you expect multi-instanton series to appear as well, or if you add that first one, you get the exact result.
Oh, well, concerning the second question, I would expect all multi-instantons appear. I mean, at least multiples of this action. As you saw in your paper with Valiant and Parisi, I would expect the full lattice of instantons to give me corrections. It seems that this one is not giving anyone, but all multiples of this should actually give you corrections. So I would expect this to happen. Now, concerning the resurgence structures, I think we still know very little about this problem as to be able to be very explicit about that. And in a sense, this is just a first step of the problem. But
so you cannot compute 100 terms of the cut, for instance, like.
What do you mean, like? Well,
like the main series, you get 100 terms.
Yes, I mean you can go past 100 terms, but it gets incredibly harder.
But for the cuts, you can't compute the germ of the cut.
What do you mean, the journal of the cat?
I mean the expansion, the
oh,
expansion
no, no, no.
of discontinuity to a reason.
No. Right now, I mean, we didn't try. I mean, the kind of work that you, for example, did for the quartic oscillator, which is probably the most complete analysis in one of these examples, I think here we are still very much still in a very preliminary stage. But there is clearly a very rich resurgent structure. On the other hand, we have an exact solution. So I think the coding of this, a full decoding, is still to be done, and it would be fantastic to have this. I mean, this is really these are very interesting physical systems involving geometry, involving quantum mechanics. So it would be great to have a handle on them.
Sorry. So just to clarify, the final answer is still written as a contour integral in the Borel plane. It just isn't the naive contour that you would have guessed.
No,
that's not true.
No, I mean I'm writing this as a Borel resummation of the perturbative series plus an instanton trans series with a complex instanton, so it doesn't really. The contour is just the standard one. It's just the standard contour on the positive real axis. Just the standard Laplace transform. I don't have to move this contour because there are no other abstractions. But still, I have to add extra terms in this trans series. Yeah, right. That could be, you know, if I rotate my contour here. But you see, I would also have to include this thing here, and this is not included, so, no.
But I mean, for a sufficiently complicated contour that weaves around.
Absolutely, yeah, but you know, instead of thinking in terms of contours, I like to think in terms of trans series with a fixed value for the parameter, and that's an equivalent way of doing it.
In a sense, you lose the meaning of the full trans series.
Yes.
If you do that. I mean, the instanton contributions are non-trivial in there, is not because of poor choice of contour.
Hmm.
So when you say that the Borel-Ruiz summation doesn't coincide with the exact result,
yes.
What you mean, I think, if I understand correctly, is that the Borel-Ruiz summation doesn't coincide with your non-perturbative completion.
Yes.
Now, it'd be possible so that somebody else proposes another yes. non-perturbative completion.
Absolutely. In a sense, this shows that there is a non-trivial non-perturbative completion in this theory, which is just the Borel-Ruiz summation.
Exactly.
You know, when a theory gives you a perturbative expansion, which is Borel summation, you can always declare that this Borel-Ruiz summation is a perturbative, a non-perturbative answer.
And this, in fact, might be another justification, if one needs one, for resurgence, because to decide which is sort of the one we like right. better, it would be, can you justify these
right. I think
grand series terms in terms of something, you know, that we expect to be there coming from the full string theory, like, for example, D-brain, correct?
Yeah, I mean, resurgence gives you a multi-parameter family of non-perturbative completions. Okay, this is the general story. It doesn't give you one because, you know, depending on the value of your parameter C, you will have one or another. Now, the main for me, if you want, there are interesting non-perturbative completions of topological string theory and non-interesting. Just doing the Borel-Ruiz summation is non-interesting. Doesn't add you anything here. What is interesting about this non-perturbative completion is it comes from a completely different world. It comes from the world of quantum mechanical operators, and this is why this non-perturbative completion is a non-trivial mathematical statement. If you give me the non-perturbative completion given by the Borel-Ruiz summation, this is a trivial mathematically, it's a trivial statement. This is still a well-defined quantity, but it's a trivial.
So there I have a question. Do you expect beyond Torek, Labial, something similar in terms of operator theory to hold?
I think there will be some sort of quantization scheme which justifies this. I'm pretty sure about it. But you see, people have always speculated that quantizing the model space of complex structures should give you a non-perturbative topological string. And I think this goes into that direction, but the kind of surprise about this is that the string coupling constant is not h-bar, but 1 over h-bar. And this is something that many people were not expecting here. And this is what we show that is happening. So in a sense, there are many different quantizations, and here the two different quantizations are related by h bar going to 1 over h bar, answering also a question that was, this is a comment related to what happened, to what people were mentioning before. In a sense, if you give me the model space of complex structure of a Carabial, I can quantize it in two ways. One is using a standard quantization, WKB, and another is using the topological string perturbative quantization, which are different. And in this case, they turn out to be related by an h-bar going to 1 over h-bar symmetry. So that's still something that has to be elucidated, but this is what really seems to be going on.
Okay. There is a quantum classical duality for the integrable system when we have family of quantum integrable system, and the quantum data is encoded in the information in the classical integrable system. Mm-hmm. Can you explain the non-perturbative completion on the quantum side in terms of classical integrable system? In that case, the spectral problem correspond to intersection of Lagrangian manifold. What could be the non-perturbative completion in that case?
I'm not sure if I understand very well the question. There is an integrable system associated to Torek Labiaus, which is this Goncharov-Kenyon integrable system. So that's one classical integral system, and once quantized gives you essentially this operator problem that I was looking at here. Okay. But I don't know what it would be the classical integrable system.
For instance, there is a family of, in finite dimensional situations, there is a family of quantum spin chain, and the information about the quantum spectrum of the spin chain is contained in the Ruiz-Narsi type models.
Yes.
And in Ruiz-Narsi type model, it corresponds to intersection of Lagrangian manifolds, and the spectrum can be traced from this intersection. And the same phenomenon exists for integrable system for Sine-Gordon. The spectral determinant in Sine-Gordon is related to classical equation of motion in another integrable system.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this might be related to what Alba was mentioning about these classical Pahlevi equations governing these spectral determinants. Yeah. So what Alba found is that in some cases, in some limits of this theory, you can actually see that the spectral determinant is governed by a classical Pahlevi equation. And in the full theory, it seems that this corresponds to Q Pahlevi equation. So this would be, in a sense, the classical integrable system that is behind. But this also is largely unexplored in this context. I mean, people do not really know what are the classical differential equations of classical integral equations that are satisfied by this quantum spectral determinant. So there are a few cases which have been studied, but this full series is still not developed yet. But this is very important because the spectral determinant is like the wave function on the moduli space that Witten was speculating long ago, that there should be some sort of well-defined wave function on the moduli space of complex Calabi-Yaus, complex moduli. And this is very much what this spectral determinant is. Spectral determinant is an analytic function on the moduli space of complex structure of this Calabi-Yau. So knowing what is this differential equation that governs this spectral determinant would give you, in a sense, the Schrödinger equation for this wave function that Witten was speculating. So I think this is a very important question.
Margos, if you considered a different resummation, like the naive Borel resummation or a different one, could you show that that was not consistent with principles of quantum mechanics, you know, like unitarity or cluster decomposition or something? Or can you show that some of them are inconsistent?
That's a very good question, but I don't know how to address it here. This is, in a sense, the question of how you would discriminate between different non-perturbative completions, right? I mean, for example, why just taking just the Borel resummation is not as good as taking this non-perturbative definition that we are... That's a very good question, and I do not have any insight on it. I mean, in a sense, because we are lacking some sort of second quantized version of string theory, which allows us to define it more properly. So even with dualities, you have still this problem that you don't know very well what are the space-time principles guiding these non-perturbative definitions. And I think here we have something similar. So I think this is an extremely important question, but I don't really know how to answer it.
Okay, thanks.
Yes.
Sorry again, I suddenly don't understand something in this picture. If you say that the first cut there does not contribute to the large orders of the Borel series, how come that you get it so easily by Borel Padé? It should be in some hidden sheet of the Riemann surface, perhaps.
Well, you mean that why this one is not contributing?
Yes.
But I think that...
And you get it, and you see it so easily.
Yeah, but still, I mean...
No, yeah. to clarify, so is it that you don't see it in the large order behavior of the coefficients?
We see this in the large order behavior. Yeah, no. This is the singularity which controls the large order behavior. But in a sense, you know, each singularity, each action comes with its own parameter in the transseries. The general transseries will have its own parameter for each of these actions. So it just happens that when you actually calculate the transseries, you have to put this parameter to zero for reasons that we don't fully understand, while this parameter is non-zero. But in the large order is controlled by this. But these, I think, are independent questions, in a sense. One question is how large order appears, and one question is what are the singularities that actually contribute to the calculation, right?
So I have a question regarding the Borel summability. So do you think whether we have a good way of distinguishing the case where the perturbative Borel resummation gives an exact result and the case where it does not?
I think one good way of is just look at the Borel plane.
Okay.
I mean, if there are complex instantons with a positive real part, they have the potential to contribute to the non-perturbative completion, but they are not going to extrapolate Borel summability. So in this instance, if you don't have any source for these complex instantons, then you know you are safe. Eh? You know, maybe you can conclude that the Borel resummation agrees with the exact answer. Okay.
So if you have the singularities on the negative real axis or around that, so
exactly. This is what happens precisely in the quartic oscillator. Yes. The singularity is here. So this cannot give you something exponentially small. So it cannot be that the coefficient in the transseries around this guy is positive. While here, you have this complex instanton which has a positive real part, so it can give you something which is exponentially small. And this is already, I mean, all this is a paper of André in the 1970s. I mean, you know, essentially, this was a very beautiful scenario where all these ideas that André with Balian and Parisi were presenting in that paper, this is a case in which they are realized very, in a very nice way. But essentially, we were just following their paper for that.
Thank you.
If there are no more questions, I would thank Marcos for the very nice talk and discussion. And there is the coffee break, and we reconvene at 11.